Thank you, Eric. Thank you to the group who has organized this session. To my memory, it's the second Soils and Art session of SSSA and the three societies. I'd like to think we have a few more in us. I've renamed the talk in and out of the soil science classroom. About 5 years ago, I had an email from Gary Spicito, an idol of mine, and here this amazing soil chemist is apparently reading the Georgics in his classroom, his soils classroom, and I was also. So I decided to put this together with a little bit of Gary's help, and this is specifically about the Georgics. Not Virgil in general, but his middle poem, his middle age poem, between his youth and his older age. It means, amazing, G-E-O, meaning on working the earth, written in the 30s B.C. It took him 7 years to write, in the form, and this is very important, in the form of a farming manual, how to farm the land. There are four poems, all have soils weaved into them. One is on raising crops, mainly in Italy, Italian perspective, trees and vines. There's a third chapter, third poem on livestock, and last, very curiously, bees. He actually finished it and read it to one of the emperors, Caesar Augustus in 29, that's at least the story. There are thousands, I bet there are many thousands of translations into many different languages. Our favorite is this one, however. 10 years old, highly recommended, David Ferry of Middlebury College, long retired poet. Highly recommended, though. But let's start with another translation, and that's probably the most famous translation of all. John Dryden, maybe some of you have heard of him, a pretty important 17th century poet, critic, literary leader. His translation in 1697, according to Richard Thomas, chair of the classics department at Harvard University, is entirely wrong. He read it as a farming manual, and it's a beautiful farming manual. People have actually set up farms based on this poem and failed. Because he really wasn't writing about the crops, the livestock. He was writing about them, but he was writing about something beyond that. So here's what Dryden said, the science of husbandry put into a pleasing dress. In Virgil, there is something of a rustic majesty that a Roman dictator at the plow's tail, he breaks the clods, tosses the dung about with an air of gracefulness. He concluded his translation with these words, the best poem by the best poet, Richard Thomas at Harvard, agrees with that even today. And what a magnificent farming manual it was. And I'd like to spend just a couple of moments reading some of these passages. But something on trees. We'll see how this goes as performance. Okay. The trees that rise up of their own free will into the light, wild, happy, in the strength they got from nature's power in the earth. Or the cucumber tendril that winds and turns and coils its way through the grass. Or the promising colt, who's a higher stepper than all the others, foals there in the fields and puts his feet more lightly down again on the soft turf. Or the murmuring humming of the bees as they groom themselves hither and thither flit around the doors and threshold of their houses. And finally, the ravens, whose hoarse voice you can hear repeated maybe 3-4 times over, high in the trees, talking together in some uncanny way, expressing delight at being home and safe in their sweet nests along with their young. Or on black soil, a rich black soil that's crumbling even before the pressure of the plowshares felt upon it. We just heard about PEDs, didn't we? So that the plowing almost seems to mimic a plowing that already has taken place. A soil like that is almost always the best for growing grain. Nowhere else will you see so many loaded wagons full of crops making their way slowly back to their houses behind their bullocks. or on oak rooting? Perhaps the question is, how deep to dig the holes for planting? I'd trust a shallow trench for vines, but for trees much deeper into the earth, especially the great oak tree, whose roots reach down as far into the underground as its crown extends into the ethereal sky. Or, provocatively, this one on infiltration. In spring, the soil, desiring seed, is dry. And then the omnipotent Father God descends in showers from the sky and enters into the joyful bridal body of the earth. His greatness and her greatness in their union, bringing to life the life waiting to live. Oh my God. No wonder Dryden was just taken with the words. Yet, contemporary scholars, I mentioned Richard Thomas in particular, has led this charge over 20, 30 years, and arguing that while it is the best poem by the best poet, it assumes only the form of a farming manual, because the Georgics begin with the fall of man, and this has nothing to do with the fall of man that Christians know, not from Eden due to sin. This is because Jupiter took over from Saturn and ordered the end of the Golden Age, the time when there were honey on all oak leaves, when wine flowed in every stream, a time with no wolves, no poisonous snakes, no hunger, no need for farms, trade, or culture. Jupiter had an idea in mind. He was worried about us being lazy. All, he said, this has to come to an end. It has to be the Iron Age, not the Golden Age. Also want should be the cause of human ingenuity. This is particularly amazing. It was Jupiter who put the deadly poison into the fangs of serpents, commanded the wolf to seek and find its prey, ordained that the storm should cause the sea to rise and flood the land, stripped from the leaves of the oaks the dew-like honey that made them glisten, hid fire, turned off the flow of wine that everywhere ran in the streams. All this, so want should be, the cause of human ingenuity, and ingenuity the cause of arts, finding little by little the way to plant new crops by means of plowing, striking the spark to ignite the hidden fire in veins of flint. Then rivers began to sense that hollow canoes were floating upon their waters. Sailors began to count the stars in the sky and give them names. And then they learned to snare the wild beasts in traps and fool songbirds with lime. Here, one lashes the river with his line, seeking its depths. There, another drags his dripping fishnet through the ocean waters. Then came the hardness of iron, and then the shriek of the sharp blade of the saw as it made its way through wood. For earlier men used wedges to cleave their wood. Then followed other arts, and everything was toil, relentless toil, urged on by need. Thus, agriculture is enforced on us. Plowing must occur, despite the consequences. Here's a little passage about biodiversity, the loss of biodiversity, because agriculture is enforced on us. Okay. There's the land that the plowman clears by cutting down the groves that stood untouched for many years and carried off the wood and pulling up the roots of the ancient trees, of birds that now unnested seeks the sky. Of nightingales that now unnested seek the sky, and the virgin field lies shining in the plowshare. And the wild beasts listened to the song of the nightingale, entranced. The oak trees moved closer to hear the song of the nightingale in mourning for her children who were taken as yet unfledged by the herdsman, heart of heart, who had happened upon the nest, she weeps all night and over repeats her lamentation and fills the listening air with her sad complaint. We call those whippoorwills. I'll pick a couple of these. So here's a couple more things about the order. The order from Jupiter, toil urged on by need. There's something about weeding here that's quite striking. Therefore, unless you take up your hoe, attacking the enemy weeds over and over again, and over, shout at the birds to scare them away, and use your pruning knife to keep on cutting back the overgrowth that threatens your plants with shade, you will, alas, end up defeated, staring at your neighbor's granary full of corn, and in the woods, you'll shake the oak tree, frantic for something to eat. So let me read about the boat rower very quickly. All things are ready to get worse, lapse backward, fall away from where they were, just as if one who struggles to row your little boat upstream against the powerful current should put, just for a moment, relaxing your arms, the current will carry you downstream, headlong, drowning you. And last, the chariot, which describes the state of the world in our time and curiously in his. Right or wrong are turned into one another. War everywhere in the world, crimes everywhere, in every way, in every shape and form. No honor at all is given to the plow. The fields are barren and empty. The farmer's gone. The crooked sickles are beaten into swords. There's war on the Euphrates, on the Rhine. Neighboring cities break their mutual oaths, sword upon sword. Mars rages everywhere. It's as if the starting line at the track, the chariots break loose, lap after lap, around and around, and the drivers pull on their reins, but it's no use, and the chariot rushes on, all out of control. Finally, Virgil's tone is strikingly contemporary, I would like to argue, in that he wrote out a concern for the future of the natural and the cultural world because the Roman Republic had been lost to war-glorifying dictators after many years of bloody civil wars. And because Virgil has written for 20 centuries of readers about the fragility of human culture and of the vulnerability of the life of plants, animals, the land, much less soil, he has not only celebrated all for the resistance to these threats, but he has given us as human beings an alternative to cynicism in our own age of concern and violence. And we therefore nominate Virgil as the first poet laureate of the Anthropocene.